to Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A recent article in the online magazine Slate called tipping an abomination and called for the end of this practice. It's a custom that originated in Europe. It transferred across the ocean when wealthy Americans returned from the continent. At first, it was slow to catch on, but now it seems tip jars are as ubiquitous as cell phones. However, the employees who share in the pooling of tips have figured in court cases involving Starbucks in New York State and Massachusetts. Could we see more states tackling cases on this issue? And what are the laws here in the Commonwealth? On today's show, we're taking a look at the legal, economic, and social aspects of the custom of gratuities. Joining us in Studio A are Ben Bratman, Associate Professor of Legal Writing at the Pitt School of Law, who specializes in and teaches employment law. Ben Bratman, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Anthony Davies, Associate Professor of Economics at Duquesne University. Anthony, good to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we would ask you, our listeners, these questions. Do you rely on tips as part of your income? Do you think the practice of tipping has gotten out of control? Join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. It's the weekend. You may very well be going out somewhere to a restaurant where at the end of the meal you'll be expected to tip. Again, we're wondering if you think the practice of tipping has gotten out of control. 412-246-2002. And again, do you rely on tips as part of your income? If so, we'd like to hear from you. Ben Bratman, let's start with you. What is the main issue behind these tipping lawsuits that have been in the news lately?
Well, the ones that have been most prominent in the media have to do with the practice of tip pooling, as it's called. Most of your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the tip jars that you see in coffee places and other such food establishments. And employers have policies of pooling the tips, taking the total that is in the jars and then distributing them to different employees and different classes of employees. And the question is not so much, by the way, whether it's legal to pool tips. It is definitely legal to do that. The question arises as to whom are the pooled tips being distributed. And that is where Starbucks and others have found themselves in court.
And what factors determine whether an employee is an agent of his employer and ineligible, therefore, to receive distributions from a tip pool? Because this, as you just stated, is at the center of the argument. So there's that question. And does state law permit employers to exclude eligible employees from such pools?
Well, as to your first question, you mentioned the term agent, and this relates to actually some terminology in the New York state law. And one of the critical components here is that the state laws vary. But the central issue in New York with the use of the term agent and in other states is that if somebody is an employee with some degree of supervisory or managerial responsibility or job duties, the law may very well not allow, depending on the state, the law may very well not allow the employer to distribute pooled collected tips to those employees who have managerial or supervisory responsibility. And again, it is going to depend on the state in many cases. The most restrictive law where Starbucks in particular ran into a problem and lost was Massachusetts, where the state law says that employers may not distribute collected tips to people who have
who are in management.
Yeah, any management responsibility. There's very strict. In other words, the people who can get tips distributed to them at Starbucks is in Massachusetts or any food establishment in Massachusetts are people who have no managerial responsibility.
And this is to separate, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's to separate those who are salaried employees and those who are or who might be getting an hourly wage, but it's a decidedly higher hourly wage than those who are eligible to receive the tips because their wages may be lower because, in fact, they can get tipped.
That is – that essentially that is true, yes.
So and the gray area here is where you have people who are managers, but there are also those who supervise, who may be in a role of delegating authority to other servers, but who are not necessarily considered management. And so there's and these are the employees with whom the service people, the people waiting at the counter, the baristas, the waiters and waitresses, these are the people with whom they do not want to share tips.
That's correct. In fact, the basis of these Starbucks lawsuits, using the Starbucks lawsuits as our example, and indeed Starbucks has been sued in many, many states, it is usually the baristas who are suing, a group of baristas, alleging that a group of employees known as shift supervisors, which from Starbucks's point of view is probably an unfortunate title for mm-hmm. those folks, that a group of employees called shift supervisors should not be allowed to share in the tips from the tip pool. But in fact, these folks called shift supervisors at Starbucks perform probably 80 to 90% of their duties identical to that which the baristas perform.
They're also serving customers.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So how could Starbucks have avoided this problem or avoid it in the future?
Well, in many states, they're actually in a pretty good position. They're winning cases. Massachusetts was actually the exception. So they may very well be comfortable continuing with what they're doing. I mean, they're a large multi-state employer, as we all know. Of course, in the states that have very strict laws, such as Massachusetts, they may choose to either continue what they're doing but only give the tips to baristas or simply stop the tip pooling practice.
Is the tip pooling practice, Anthony, is that a good idea? Why should – someone may wonder, and certainly an employee whose income is based largely on tips – If they maybe see themselves as working harder or performing their job better than somebody else, why should they have to share tips with someone who may not be earning as much as they are?
Yeah, well, tips evolved to solve an economic problem, actually. And the economic problem is one in which the manager, the person who's setting the worker's wage, cannot observe the quality of work that the person is providing. You know, good case in point, the guy who changes your oil. The manager can directly observe, has the guy, you know, done what he said he was going to do? Has he done it in a certain period of time? Does he keep his workstation clean? There's no need to tip that person because I, the manager, can observe what he's doing and I can reward or punish him through his wage. The difference is when you deal with something like a waiter, where the manager can't observe, you know, how friendly are you being? The level of friendliness is going to vary based on the customer's desires and so forth. And so what you do is you take the ability to reward the worker out of the hands of the manager and you put it into the hands of the customer because the customer can directly observe the quality of the service the customer is receiving. And so this is how tips have evolved. And then, you know, it gets more complex because, you know, the waiter wants to now in turn reward the cook for getting the food along quickly so the waiter in turn can satisfy the customer so you get the tip sharing. So this is the way – this is economically the reason it exists. Now, we've kind of gone overboard, and you get tips now. The tip jar, for example, at Starbucks. The person at Starbucks, I order a coffee. He gives me a coffee. That's kind of all there is to it. There's no need to tip here.
Yeah, well, you would think there wouldn't be, but yet are we seeing that people are expecting tips? I think we are, aren't we?
Oh, we're seeing that people are expecting them, sure. You know, if you can get another source of income, there's no problem there. The question is, economically, will it persist? My guess is what will happen is eventually reach a point where people have gone too far. You see this now with the taxi service Uber. One of the things they advertise is you don't have to tip the driver. Your credit card is on file. They pick you up. They take you where you want to go, and that's the end of the transaction. And this actually, at least for me, is one of the attractive things. I'm happy to pay the price, but I don't want to mess with figuring out what the tip is and whether I should or whether I shouldn't. It takes that out of my hands. So the economy will businesses will try different things to satisfy the consumer. And when the consumer feels that tipping has now become more problem than it's worth, you'll get entrepreneurs who offer services that explicitly prohibit tipping.
What about the fear factor? Some people tip because they're afraid that if they don't, the waiter might spit in their soup, for example, or their date will think they're cheap. Are these things people should be legitimately concerned about?
Well, I would imagine, you know, this is it's the interesting part. It's the social part. You don't want to appear to be a skinflint, you know, and the other guy's tipping, so now you have to tip as well. Certainly that plays a role, perhaps more so in the case of the waiter, because the waiter, you know, can spit in your soup. But then that comes back to the actual reason for the tip, which is the tip gives the customer the ability to directly reward the quality of the service. So in that sense, you know, the spitting in the soup scenario is the flip side of, you know, you've done a great job, you've been very nice to me, and therefore I'm going to give you a larger tip.
We're talking about the practice of tipping and some of the legal issues surrounding tipping here on today's edition of Essential Pittsburgh. Our guests, Ben Bratman, Associate Professor of Legal Writing at the Pitt School of Law, and also Anthony Davies, Associate Professor of Economics at Duquesne University. We'd like to hear from you, especially if you are someone who relies on tips as part of your income. Also, we'd like to hear from those who are wondering whether the practice of tipping has gotten out of control. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. 412-246-2002. You can email a comment or question to us at ESSPGH@WESA.FM. You can also reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. The history of tipping, apparently it originated in Europe. It did not originate in the United States. Started in Europe and made its way to the United States from people just going over there, experiencing restaurant meals and adopting this custom.
Well, yeah, in a sense, the modern form of tipping has. But if you go back even further, it's kind of the way things were always done, because, you know, you would walk into a tavern and the manager is also the guy who serves you. He's probably also the guy that cooked and made the beer. So when you pay him, you're paying directly, the payment for the food is the tip. So in some sense, it's going back to our original roots.
412-246-2002. Let's take a call from Jim in Oakland. Jim, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, Paul. I love the show. I love the show. Now,
thank you.
I tip. Now, I'm blind and I'm on SSI disability, so I'm on a fixed income. Now, I tip. It's hard for me to tip. I do it anyway because I know I'm probably stared at if I don't tip. And I think a lot of tipping should be stopped.
Well, you're not the only one who feels that way, Jim. And Jim raises a good point. For people who are on fixed incomes, going out to eat occasionally is a luxury that and you would want that anybody should be able to enjoy that. But then, when tipping becomes a factor, does it become a detriment if it negatively impacts business? If it is a factor in someone like Jim, for example, deciding whether I can afford to eat out or not. What about it? Ben, I'm going to throw that to you.
Well, from the perspective of the low-wage employees who are in occupations where they, shall we say, expect tips, I think we do need to bear in mind, and this may support what your caller is saying, we do need to bear in mind that employers are obligated to let's put it this way, meet the difference, which means that they're allowed to pay these low-wage workers as low as under $3 an hour, which is much lower than the minimum wage, and then allow the tips that they earn to make the difference up to what the actual minimum wage is, meaning that these employees are ultimately going to get at least minimum wage anyhow. So the typical a frequent rationalization or explanation, I should say, for tipping is that these low-wage workers need the tips in order to make up to a minimum wage. But in fact, the employer is obligated to get them up there even if the tips don't get them there. So certainly if a person feels that way, does not want to tip, is in an economic situation, does not want to tip, other than the fear factor that we discussed earlier, that certainly is something that someone can do, I think.
But you raise an interesting point, and I'll let either Ben or Anthony respond to this. But if workers are being paid well below minimum wage and are only in many cases making up the difference between the seven-something an hour, I believe it's
$7.25
an hour, and if they're getting paid, what is it, just under $3 an hour?
$2.13 federally and $2.83 in Pennsylvania.
So you're talking about, you know, close to $5 difference there. At some point, do you see perhaps it being incorporated into the minimum wage laws that restaurant workers be at least paid a minimum wage by their employers, who in many cases are employing them in a very profitable business? And then the incentive becomes to make something more than just the minimum with an excellent performance that earns them tips.
Yeah, and I think you know, one of the things that would happen there if we did raise the minimum wage on tipped workers is that what you would see is that the amount that people traditionally tip is going to decline. So really what we're talking about here is not paying these workers more or paying them less, but rather we're talking about in what form does the pay come? Does it come through the manager or does it come through the customer?
Ben, will we see more of these lawsuits regarding tipping?
I think we will, although they, from Starbucks' perspective, I'm sure they hope that won't be more against them. I do think we will, and it's particularly the case where employers are trying to – other employers that might try to push the envelope a little bit to share collected tips with categories of employees who are not typically tipped workers – and to try to push the envelope a little bit under the law, which is not entirely clear on that question. And so we may very well see more lawsuits of this nature, absolutely.
We have a couple of tweets. First, this from Bram in Pittsburgh. He says, tipping's certainly not overdone where salaries are so low, and it's a bit like asking, is generosity overdone? Relied on him 5 years, he says. Also from Blake in Pittsburgh, he says, if you don't tip at least 15% every time, you shouldn't be eating out. Tips are people's livelihood. Well, we'll talk about the proliferation of tipping. We're not just seeing it in restaurants and coffee shops, but in all sorts of service industries. And is it appropriate? How do you feel about it? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We're talking about tipping here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tipping point. We're talking about tipping. Has it gotten out of hand? Are more and more businesses that you frequent asking for gratuities? Is it appropriate? How do you tip? Do you think the practice of tipping has gotten out of control? Also, do you rely on tips as part of your income? We'd like to hear from you. You can join our conversation with Ben Bratman of the University of Pittsburgh and Anthony Davies of Duquesne University by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And we've got quite a few callers lined up to join in the conversation. Let's go to Sarah in Regent Square. Sarah, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Sarah. Sarah is communicating in Morse code, I think. Sarah, are you there? She's a waitress, it says, so it would be nice to hear from Sarah, but I'm afraid it sounds as though we do not have her. So sorry about that. Sarah, try to get in touch with us, and we'll try to reconnect with you. Meanwhile, Matt in the North Side. Matt, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet.
How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
My concern here, right, I tip whenever I go anywhere, and you know, it's because I know that people don't make a minimum wage or like far from a decent wage. But I also know that most places, if you don't end up making minimum wage, they don't ever pay you minimum. They never recoup the difference, first of all. And, you know, I know that most of the reason that they don't pay people a decent wage is because when they advertise $5.99 dinner combos, they know that really you're going to end up paying, you know, $7, $8, $9, you know, at Applebee's or wherever it is, in the form of tips. So they get to advertise a lot cheaper product than they end up actually, you end up actually having to pay for. And it's obviously just, you know, a marketing scam. So,
Matt,
that's my point. Thanks for having me on.
No, well, before you go, Matt, you are saying, I want to make sure I have this clear, is that one of the points you're making is you're saying the employers do not make up the difference between the below $3 an hour wage and what the minimum wage is of $7.25, that and that's why you make sure to tip?
Yeah.
How do you know that? How do you know that employers? How do you know that? If I may ask you a question, Matt, how do you know that the employers that the restaurants are not in fact making up the difference?
Well, I have friends that work in restaurants, and I've worked. Worked at nightclubs where servers and people like that on slow nights weren't given any sort of you know, retroactive compensation for the fact that they only had two or three tables that night, and they ended up working, you know, 8 hours and only walking out with, you know, $15 in tips or something.
Well,
like
let's ask our legal expert, Ben Bratman, here. What is that legal? What are the tipping laws in Pennsylvania? And can a business get away with what Matt is saying they're getting away with?
No, both under federal law and in Pennsylvania, an employer is obligated to make up that difference if the collected tips, however distributed, do not make up the difference. So legally, no, they cannot get away with that. Now, the question of whether this is actually happening and people aren't being employers aren't being caught, so to speak, that's a separate question.
And it may well be happening, and some employees may be loath to confront their employers about this for fear of losing their jobs.
That is absolutely correct. Certainly the law prohibits retaliating against employees for doing so, but again, that's what the law says and what actually ends up happening are not always the same thing.
What are some other – I'm sorry, Anthony.
I had a question for Ben, actually. Is it possible that this is done, for example, on a two-week basis? So on one day, you may not make any tips, so you're working at less than minimum wage. But on another day, in the pay period, you may get so many tips that it more than makes up for the tips you didn't make the previous day. Does the law allow that kind of a switch?
I'm not entirely sure the time period on which the employer is allowed to define it, but ultimately, it's probably done per paycheck.
Right. You raise an interesting question, though, Anthony, and I want to get into maybe some of the other aspects of Pennsylvania's tipping laws. But we have quite a few people on the phone. All of you, hang on. We'll get to all of you. Starting with Stephen in North Point Breeze. Stephen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, I have two brief questions. One is a linguistic question, and that is, does the word tip come from the acronym to ensure promptness? I have been told this. And the second is, and it dovetails with an earlier call, is it factual that those with lesser income are more prone to tip better than those with greater income? I base this on studies that have shown that those with lesser income give a greater amount of their discretionary income to charity than those with greater income.
Well, I mean, if it were up to Dickens, I'd say that he would agree with your theory on your second question there, Stephen, because as he illustrates in A Christmas Carol, Bob Cratchit was exceedingly generous, even though he had far less income at his disposal than his boss, Mr. Scrooge, who was, in fact, not. And some say that's how people do get rich, is because they
they are not necessarily generous. Is there any scientific evidence, Anthony or Ben, to track that to so that you could answer Stephen's question?
I don't know of any data. I know anecdotally, people I know who have been waiters or waitresses always, because they understand the business, they're much more upfront about giving big tips. Now, you know, whether that means that on average, poorer people are more apt to tip more, I don't know.
And the first question he had about the origin of the word tip to ensure promptness, I have no idea. And everybody,
it sounds good.
Sounds like we're all drawing a blank on that one. So sorry we couldn't help you with that first question, Stephen. Let's go to Eric from the North Side. Eric, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Oh, we lost Eric. Let's go to Marty in Pittsburgh. Marty, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hello, Marty. And evidently we have lost Marty, so we'll try to get him back. Let's
okay. Listen.
Wait, oh, there's
you're
Marty.
Still listening to me, right?
Is this Marty?
Yes, it is. Can
okay.
You hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, I can barely hear you, but that's okay. I think the idea that employers pay less because they read some 17th century philosopher's treatise is a bunch of hooey. I'd use stronger languages, but I have respect for your program. They pay less because they make more money when they pay less. And I tip 20%. I cannot think of a time when I failed to, no matter what the service or whatever it was like.
Well, Marty, certainly they say that it's appropriate to pay or to tip between 15 and 20%, at least 15, and in many cases appropriate to pay 20. So I'm sure that the people that you have tipped appreciate that. But what about this idea that the people, these business owners, are getting away with something that perhaps is unethical in some way?
Well, I think that this goes to the question of, you know, is tipping about, as one of your earlier callers said, is it about generosity, or is it, as the tweet that came in, is it something that's mandatory? Everybody should tip 15%. And I think the fact is, if we go to the space where we say tipping is mandatory, you should always pay 15%, that's no longer tipping. That's the guy's wage. And you lose the ability now as the customer to reward someone or to punish someone for a good or a bad service.
And Ben, what about the other things we should know about the tipping laws in Pennsylvania? Anything in particular?
Well, in Pennsylvania, employers can pool tips and redistribute them, but they're only allowed to redistribute them to employees who, and the language of the law is, customarily and regularly receive tips. So anyone who's in sort of a customer service mode, they're allowed to pool tips for and redistribute them to. Now, what's interesting about this, both in Pennsylvania and in federal law, is that what employers sometimes want to do, this is not entirely sort of your classic labor low-wage employees versus management salaried higher-income employees issue. Sometimes employers are seeking to redistribute gratuities, tips, to other low-wage workers who are not in customer service. For example, dishwashers or cooks who are not at all. And there is an issue in the law right now that is there's sort of a fight going on between the Federal Department of Labor and some of the federal courts right now as to whether employers should be allowed to do this, to redistribute tips to other low-wage workers. So there are some questions in the law about it, and actually it also, I think, points out that it is not, as I said, a classically management versus labor sort of situation, that everything an employer necessarily is doing as far as redistributing tips would necessarily be for the sake of the higher wage workers or for itself.
Well, now the issue of have we gone overboard with tipping, and when you think about the number of services that someone may be accessing during the course of a day, if someone prefers to have their shoes shined and then they go for the haircut and the manicure or the pedicure, and then grab lunch at a nice bistro, and then the valet brings them their car, or they take a cab home, and then the doorman opens the door for them. You know, by the end of the day, there are seven or eight people you could potentially be tipping. Are too many people expecting to be tipped?
Oh, I think so. Clearly, and you know, it's a cool.
if I were in one of those jobs, I'd probably jump on that bandwagon as well, because we've established this kind of social aura about you're supposed to tip. And so, you know, now anymore, sometimes you pull up to a hotel or you come out of the airport and you've got to fight for the guy not to take your bag because he wants to take, because he expects a dollar for moving it, you know, 10 feet.
And you're sitting here, they're going, no, I can handle it. My favorite experience with this was when I was in Seattle and wanted to see the historic Smith Tower in Seattle, which will turn 100 next year. And they have, of all the skyscrapers in the United States, they reportedly have the only manually operated elevators. And so there are men in there, there may be women as well, who operate these. And there is a tip jar in that elevator. And you are expected to tip them when you get to the top of the Smith Tower. Let's go to 412-246-2002. Let's go to Numley from Wheeling, West Virginia. Numley, I hope I have that right. Yes. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, you're correct. As I explained to the young lady, I'm an expedite driver. I'm all over the country. And the one thing that I find on tipping anymore that I think is absolutely sad and hilarious are the fast food chains at the drive-up window where they have a tip cup. And I'm thoroughly convinced that these fast food chains, and I'm not just limiting it to one, it's nationwide on most of them, are having some type of a job fair to find people to work for them that have the attention span and the memory between a gnat and a goldfish, because if breathing wasn't an involuntary function, you'd find them suffocated where they're standing. Because if you ask for condiments at a drive-up window, salt and pepper, 9 times out of 10, you will get neither. And if you ask them, you'll get one or the other, but you won't get both. Yeah. And I find it just absolutely hilarious when they have a tip jar up there. I generally tell them, you know, is this for China?
Well,
because tipping is a river in China.
In defense of these fast food workers, though, Numley, have you ever had to stand at a window as people drive up for, you know, 7-8 hours at a stretch? It might test your attention span as well.
Yes, one of the first jobs I had was when I was in high school, 1961, in Indianapolis, the very first McDonald's they had there, and I worked there for a year and a half before I graduated.
So you're saying that you made sure, as you think these workers today should do, of making sure everybody had the right condiments and salt and pepper, and that should be part of their job, and they shouldn't expect to be tipped for it.
No, they're getting paid for what they're doing. It's a drive-up window. It is part of their job to fulfill the customer's order. And, I mean, I have no problem tipping anybody. I'm very generous on tipping. But there again, if I have bad service, the best tip I can tell most of them, stay away from old men with cold hands. I've not got time for it.
All right, Numley. Well, we thank you for your call. And Ben or Anthony, what about Numley's point? Does it represent how some other people you've run into feel out there?
With respect to
feeling as though he's saying, particularly in the case of these fast food workers, that the asking for tips has gone, or trolling for tips has gone too far.
Yeah, no, I agree with that point to a certain extent. I would return to the question of the wage that some of these workers are making, and make the point, though, that even if they are ultimately making minimum wage in compliance with the law, whether partially through tips or not, the minimum wage itself is very low, and it has not kept up with inflation, and it has not been increased to the point where I think a lot of people think it should be for a living wage. So though his point certainly has a lot of merit, and I myself am not inclined to tip for mediocre or poor service, or at least not tip up to anywhere near 15%.
What about for basic service? What about for the things that you just simply expect in the course of someone doing their job? In other words, should somebody be tipped for simply doing what they need to do to provide service to an individual, whether it's, you know, picking up the burger at the window or, you know, changing the oil in the car, that kind of thing?
Well, I think this is a matter on which reasonable people can certainly disagree. From my perspective, I do think that the quality of the service, no matter how sort of basic or expected it might be, the quality of the service matters, and you can usually distinguish how service is delivered and the merit of it and the quality of it and the speed of it and the efficiency of it, et cetera, no matter how basic it is, and that one could make a decision about an amount of a tip that's appropriate.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Drew in Pittsburgh. Drew, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you.
I wanted to call and comment, or rather just continue a point that an earlier caller, Matt, was making about how a restaurant or whomever, whatever, has to fulfill the minimum wage if the tips don't fulfill a minimum wage. And he said that that never happens. And I've over 8 years, I worked at several restaurants, chains, privately owned ones, white tablecloth, diners and the sort, and they usually will find any excuse to not fulfill that. And like your one guest was saying, they don't know if it's over the week or the month or that night if they have to fulfill it. If you say, hey, I didn't even come close to minimum wage, they go, oh, well, it has to average out for the week, so come back in a week. Or, oh, it has to average out over the month, so come back at the end of the month and we'll look at it to see if your tips for the whole month made up an average.
And did they? Did you found that they did, in fact, make up for that?
Sometimes. I mean, usually you're so exhausted by the time you're sweeping under booths and wiping off and filling salt and pepper shakers that, you know, honestly, if the job wasn't tipping well enough within the first month, I usually got out of there.
Mm.
And the second thing, Marty was another caller, and he was talking about it's bizarre that we still do tips or whatever. But I find it intriguing, and this is just a comment, that employers more or less, you know, you're buying their food, and it's your job to pay their employees to serve it to you. In another way, I mean, it's one way of looking at it. And I think it's a bit of a catch-22 because, I mean, if I was waiting tables and people got really mean with me, I would probably give them terrible service if I knew my wage wasn't going to change. But at the same time, tipping etiquette varies from person to person. I mean, sometimes you can give someone outstanding service all night and get $2 on a $300 bill, and you're going, what did I do wrong? And then vice versa, someone who just throws you a $20 bill on a $20 check for you to take. But, I mean, that's the gamble you play with restaurant service. I'd like to see a restaurant that, when you get hired, gives you the option. Do I accept tips or do I get a standard hourly wage, refusing tips to anyone who tries to? But then you'd have to get a really honest employee to not accept tips.
Well, that's an interesting point, Drew. And Anthony, you're nodding your head in agreement.
Yeah, well, you know, as an economist, I love to see experiments like this. And I think the interesting experiment would be to have, you know, two different restaurants, one of which, you know, tells its customers you may not tip. The full wages are paid directly to the
Well, in
the
Europe,
workers.
In fact, servers are offended. That's
right. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. So the question then becomes, which of these two types of restaurants do the customers want? Do they want the one where they can directly reward or punish the workers, or do they want this one? They don't have to worry about any of that. Just pay a bill and you're done. Let the customer decide.
We have a couple of tweets, one from Jan who agrees with you, Ben. She says the real resolution to tipping would be to raise the minimum wage and include wait staff. And there is also a question here from Nettie P. Why do American restaurants not offer a living wage for waiters and waitresses? Why is it not considered a, quote, real profession, end quote?
Well, I would say the question about why do they not offer a living wage, and she puts the question to the restaurants. Why don't the managers, why don't the restaurants offer the living wage? The question isn't about the restaurants. It's about the customers. Are you willing to pay more for your food so that the restaurant can pay a living wage? If the answer is no, then the restaurant can't afford to pay the living wage. It comes down to what the customer is willing to spend.
Yeah, and just to echo on that point from Anthony, the restaurant business is a business with a pretty low profit margin, generally speaking. And so I really do think that's what he says is correct.
Well, it's been an interesting conversation. Certainly when it comes to tipping, restaurants and coffee shops like Starbucks are some of the first to come to mind. But there are a lot of other industries where we're seeing this, a lot of other service employees expecting to be tipped. And it will be an ongoing debate about who should be tipped, when, and how much. But we've enjoyed having the conversation, certainly with our two guests, Ben Bratman, Associate Professor of Legal Writing at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law. Ben, it's been a pleasure meeting you. Thank you for joining us on
the program. You're welcome.
And Anthony Davies, Associate Professor of Economics at Duquesne University. Anthony, again, it was nice having you back with us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we go cherry picking with Rhonda Schult of Local Goodness. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.